Coming up on episode 8 of Bringing Wisdom to Life, Learning to Bloom, Tulips as Teachers, with Eva Ariella Lindberg, author of the book Tulip Love, a healing model for individuals and communities. Hello, my name is Jeff Westman, and welcome to another edition of Bringing Wisdom to Life, a podcast offering possibilities and perspectives for living well. In ancient Persian mythology, the tulip represents perfect love. This simple and elegant flower has a long and intimate relationship with cultures throughout the world that transcends simple window dressing. Its fascinating shape and blossom are deeply rooted within the human psyche and finds expression in ancient rock art as well as festivals as early as the Ottoman Empire to today's Burning Man. In this episode, we explore the tulip as a tool for deep personal and collective transformation with my guest, Eva Ariella Lindberg. Eva is the author of the book Tulip Love, a healing model for individuals and communities. So welcome, Eva.
Thank you.
You have a new baby here, Tulip Love. Yeah. And before we get into the actual book, I'd like to ask you, what led to the book? How did you come to write the book and your association with tulips?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of a story before the book, pre-adulthood even, because it's almost like I'm asking myself also how come the tulips came into my life. And it's almost like the tulips had me and I had the tulips and it organically grew. And the last part was the book. But there have been stages before that. And I guess it started with me being in Sweden and loving being in nature and picking flowers a lot with my sister. And my grandparents loved to pick blueberries and mushrooms. So it was out there. And then they had also a lot of flowers in the garden. And I would paint it for all my childhood years. And then I went to study all kinds of things like architecture and fine arts. And I still felt like I wasn't doing what I'm supposed to do. So then I went to ask a counselor, like for a guided meditation, guided imagery work. And in that place, when we went to the unconscious world, I met my inner child. And it was a surprise because in this landscape, kind of half dream time, I saw a huge fields of tulips in the horizon. And the little girl would just run over there and just start to pick them. And she was overjoyed. And then she looked for people and she ran over to look for people, and then she took one tulip and put one in each person's heart. And she walked around like this and put tulips in their hearts, and she was so happy. And I came out of this session, I was like, wow, that's amazing. But how come this is not a profession? You know, it's not really something I can do in the world. But then I went to University of Christian Spirituality. Mm-hmm. And then they did the reinvention of work.
That's Matthew Fox's university in Oakland?
Right, exactly. And for my master's project there, I did something called the Kin of Kiva. It's kind of a healing center. And I worked with the Tulip Parallel, how to create a community through a blossoming process. And beyond the sacred geometry and the permaculture, organic architecture, I also had a sacred spiritual center. So when I finished that master programs, I felt like, well, how can I actually apply what I've done to something in action? And then I met with a few friends and I said, let's do a center. And then we got together for a festival and beautiful healers came together in 99. We did the first Tulip Temple event. And
so the tulips had already, at that point, established themselves as your kind of icon.
Well, it's like they grow on me slowly, organically. And then, like, I have been painting them also with artwork, mixed media, oil paintings. And it kind of just, I wasn't sitting, well, I'm going to use this flower. And it was like, came to me as an kind of intuitive need to create a sacred space. And the tulip holds, its form is very beautiful. It holds a container for that. So I'm using it as a metaphor. Mm-hmm. They're actually entering into a space of a flower when we heal within the tulip temple. And I can tell you more what happens at the tulip temple. But I just wanted to say that the process to it was kind of surprising because it just kind of popped into my space. Even if, like, when we did the entrance to the sanctuary, I would take a sheet. I saw a sheet with a big hole in it, and I saw, wow, this could be tulips, and tulips is cinnamon of tulips.
Right.
So, yeah. And so we're going in through tulips, and that's kind of a sacred passage into more of a womb-like place, like the tulip holds, like a sacred container.
What do you think's going on there?
I think we live in very stress-based societies, and we're touch deprived. We feel alienated. We have not a sense of belonging. We're just all over the place. We don't have focus. We don't have time to just breathe and rest, to relax into ourselves, and to be taken care of. And so suddenly, there's an environment where you have beautiful healers who give you unconditionally. That's like, wow. They give me, I don't need to give a certain fixed rate of money. I'm just being given love just because I am what I am. That's one aspect that's extremely healing. The other aspect, I think it's subconscious. If you're going in through a tunnel that's like kind of the female passage into the womb, then it's like, oh, yeah, I can come back home to a very soft place and to my mother, you know, and regress a little bit to safety where we really were held lovingly by our mothers, even though some had better experiences in the womb and pregnancies, and some had different ones. But it's kind of in our psyche of the human being to want to go back there. So I think that's a big piece of it. The other piece is I really feel the tulips have a beautiful energy, vibration that just wants to love, because it has an expression of emptiness, the way it's held, like a rose. It has a lot of petals and it's like flowery existence. It's like a lot of movement, and it's kind of a celebration of some sort. Mm-hmm. Or a paradise flower is like a pointy existence, and a sunflower seed has a lot of seeds, has a connection to the sun. It's like every flower has their language. Mm-hmm. And the tulip is just standing empty. It says, okay, I'm ready, I'm willing to receive from above abundance and love. And there's a lot of Kabbalistic parallels that I'm writing in the book about that too. The other thing that's strong also is archetypal work, the inner child and the regal self. But maybe I should explain a little bit more what happens in the tulip temple so people can know who have never been. So in an event, I'm just going to summarize a little bit that people are invited to come in, and there's somebody is greeting you, and then you go in through this passage, and then there's somebody who's asking you inside if you want to lie down on mats, get a healing with the clothes on, lying down, or if you want to sit and meditate, or later on to be welcomed on the thrones and to feel your regalness and have an empowerment experience. And it's good to do that after you've had the inner child healing. And in the book, I'm talking about the connection between these two archetypes. It's very important to
the
combine.
The inner and the regal.
Yeah. Because when they're connected, there is a healing place.
Inner child. Yeah.
So that's kind of very basic information just to get a feeling. And the sanctuary is decorated in the spirit of tulips, of course. Mm-hmm. So you feel like it's kind of a little bit like Alice in the Wonderland, but in a more serious way. Just come home to yourself and not needing to have any masks.
Having read the book, it is striking to just experience all these different dimensions of tulip, the flower. You know, my experience with the tulip is it's just a flower, but you've exploded that notion, and it's really remarkable your relationship with the tulip. Mm. And you speak to different experiences in the book of how you can use them in many different capacities, whether planting them around the house or relational, you know, relational tools or the inner archetypal tools. So, and also, it's just another thing was fascinating, just the history of the tulip. It's, you know, it's not just you having your
craze about it.
You know, throughout history, maybe briefly you could just tell us some of that.
Well, I can give a quote if you want by somebody who wrote also a book about flowers and tulips.
Oh, yeah, the Michael Pollan.
Yes, The Botany of Desire. He was quoting a really nice thing. It could give you a little idea of what happened. It was in the 1700 Holland where the period of tulipomania erupted, and people were really losing perspective of what is what, and they used to buy bulbs for really high prices, and it became really, like a stock market.
And they called it, they really called it tulipomania?
Yeah, it's
like
called tulipomania.
Like
it is called the tulipomania, yeah. It's been a lot of written about it. So I will read this if you would like to.
Sure.
3.5 centuries earlier, the tulip, still fairly new to the West, unleashed a brief collective madness that shook a whole nation and nearly brought its economy to ruin. Never before or since has a flower, taken a star turn on history's main stage, as it did in Holland between 1634 and 1637. All that remains of this episode, a speculative frenzy that sucked people at every level of society into its whirl, is a neologism, tulipomania, that's not had to be dusted off in all the centuries since, and a historical puzzle. Why there, in that stolid, parsimonious, Calvinist nation? Why then, at a time of general prosperity? And why this particular flower, cool, scentless, and somewhat aloof? The tulip is one of the least Dionysians of flowers, far more likely to elicit admiration than excite passion. Michael Pollan, The Botany of Desire, Random House Publishing. I guess he taps into a very good question. That's why I'm trying to write this book also. What is it about the tulips that we're so excited about? And many people love also just looking at it. It's an aesthetic beauty that soothes our eyes, even the third eye. And it talks about an aloofness, but it's more that it doesn't try to say, oh, I'm so beautiful. It really is proud of its beauty, but it comes from an egoless place. That's what I like. It's like, it's almost like a mirror. It's like if you're really beautiful and you appreciate life and others, so then you can reflect that to others and people can see the beauty. And it's maybe why tulip is simple in a way. But it's not coming to get you. It's more like be love and it loves you. That's how I see it or feel it. Other things that the tulip does is also has a combination between male and female. It looks like the male organ from outside mm-hmm. when it's closed, and it looks when it's open like the female. So it's a chapter in there where I write a lot about that. And maybe that's also a need within us to want that perfect union between male and female, not just within us, but between partners. So that flower comes a symbol for that. And there are many other things that I write about in the book. Also, metaphors of how it blossoms and what each part of the flower symbolizes in our own process and how we carry ourselves. There's also a subtle kind of vibration or energy that it exudes. It doesn't have a smell like a rose, but it has another kind of feeling to it that works on other levels.
You're listening to a conversation with Eva Ariella Lindberg, author of the book Tulip Love, A Healing Model for Individuals and Communities. My name is Jeff Westman. We'll be back in a moment. So, Eva, why did you write the book?
Mainly because it was really hard to train and teach everybody that came and helped. So I wanted to document what is best, what I see is good to do during a healing of a tulip temple event. And so there are like four chapters that are mainly just the healing model. So that I felt like if we ground it into to actually didactic points, it makes the space more sacred. It makes it more easy for people to come in and learn and hold the space for others to heal.
Is it set up in a way that people can read this book and create their own tulip temples all over the world?
Yes. And there's a guideline too. One can purchase beyond the book if we do a training or a course for people to really get into how to do the healing work, because you can read it, but you still won't get exactly the whole idea unless you have created a space where you feel the energy and you know exactly what's happening inside yourself. So it's best to do it through a teaching or a course. If you can't travel or get there and you somewhere in the world, you can use it as a blueprint and then create something similar in your community to create more space for healing and peace and love and coming home to oneself.
I'm wondering, the tulips themselves and your relationship to them, they have obviously been a teacher to you. And I'm wondering if they can be a teacher to others in the same or similar way. And, you know, I think of shamans throughout, you know, time have had relationships with the plant world and plant intelligence, whether through imbibing them or other ways that they're able to access these other forms of intelligence.
Findhorn is a place where they connect with plants, and I'm going to go there too and talk. And I love that kind of connection some people have, or the shamans do. I can imagine in a world they go to. I feel it's nice to do it on a basic nature way, not to use so many alternative ways to do it, like drugs, because it's kind of a shortcut to somewhere where we could go organically by ourselves naturally. So I'd be happy to meet those people in the world who meet the tulip too and see what they feel.
I wonder if you could speak to the power of intention, because it seems to be something that I saw as an integral aspect of this work.
I feel like in the world we don't revere tenderness and innocence. And that's what the flower stands for. So if you have a circle, a ritual, and you plant, even if it's one little bulb, and you say, I plant this with peace and love for my relationship to X will be better. And see what happens, because I've had the experiences. Maybe not everybody will have it, but it kind of softens things. It's a subtle concealed thing, and it has a way to grow. Like I talking about relationships, there's 1 year I put two bulbs in the relationship area and the bagua in terms of feng shui placement in my home. And that year they grew really beautiful and it was a nice relationship I had. And then the year afterwards, I put those two bulbs in the same area and only one tulip grew.
Uh-oh.
And that was coinciding with the end of the relationship. So it can be a random thing, some people might think, but to me it's not. It's like the tulips speak. By the way, I have a poem about that. If you want, I can read.
Yes, let's hear it.
Maybe that will show a little bit more what I think tulips do. To us, tulips may appear silent in their glory, yet inside their secret kingdom, volumes of tender love are spoken. We who rush, we who easily scorn, we who often like to dismiss, could use to slow down. To silence our minds' incessant chatter, and miraculously hear the divine whispering that tulips know how to do so well. When we finally hear their exquisite calling of otherworldly love, we gently melt inside and slowly expand into a big, calming sigh. Did you hear that tender touch of these tulips?
So what are some of the experiences that people have shared with you after having been in the tulip temple?
They usually, and also the gatekeeper testifies, that they usually come pretty stressed, uptight, and, you know, we try to tell them, let go of the day, and we sage them and make them feel like they can take down a few layers, take their shoes off and come in. And some people say that they reluctantly leave and that they're more joyous, relaxed, glowing, feeling like, wow, I've been missing myself, you know, missing coming home to me. And also being touched by people is very healing. The part of the inner child is also nice because we always have to be grown up and responsible. So we suddenly can feel, we can curl into a place and just being held. It's like almost the inner child goes, wow, they take time to be with me. You're not, really? And that's very healing too.
Yeah.
And so I think people come out of there feeling more tender and empowered as well with the regal work too.
Speaking a little about the regal work, we've heard about the inner child, but what can you say about that regal? Because there's a throne.
Yes, it's a place that's very connected to the Kabbalah too. Basically, it's a place to invite us to take responsibility for our life and sit inside ourselves, basically, and to own our existence and just kind of sit up straight like a tulip and be beauty and say, this is who I am, I'm beautiful, but not like, oh, check me out, I'm a great king. You know, it's more like, I am a self-contained, mature king.
Yeah. You know, it makes me think of the way we perceive beauty in this culture. It's so closely tied to the idea of celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much a focus on celebrity now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember where I heard it, but somebody was asking teenagers what they wanted to be when they grew up, and they just said famous. It wasn't even attached to any occupation anymore. It's just, you know, this whole idea of being famous and being known, and it's in such contrast in a way to this kind of simple, humble beauty, which is very powerful and attractive, obviously, that it's almost more of an inner beauty.
Right.
That comes through.
That's true. But the famous part too, there's the man who started the Hasidic movement in Judaism, Baal Shem Tov in Russia, 200 years ago, he said, it's not advised to be famous because it's a lot of problems too. And a lot of people are up there, starred, so they know that. It's also kind of hellish. So it's better to be beautiful, but in a quiet way. And I heard Kabbalistically, too, some people are really, really rich. The reason why they have a hard time spending money, because they don't believe they're worthy to have the money, because they feel so not self-contained and happy. It's very strange for us to think that way. Wow, they have all this money, they can do all this and that, but they just don't enjoy life. So what's the point? You know, famous and millionaire, it's just an illusion. Unless you do it the right way, like Paul Newman, people give their, you know, profit, you know, do good things with it.
Yeah, I'm sure they feel much better about
their cause,
their wealth and what they're doing with it. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned the Kabbalah many times, and there is a big part of it in the book, so I want you to have an opportunity to express that, because it seems to be
a lot.
Passion of yours now.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Maybe you could explain what the Kabbalah is, too.
There's an introduction in the appendix.
For those who don't know.
Kabbalah starts, it's the mystical pathways of Judaism. It's actually very much part of the whole Judaism as well. It's Torah is what Moses got on the mountain of Sinai. I mean, everybody knows about Moses and the times of the Bible when he got the Ten Commandments. At that point, he got the download of the Torah, which is the five books of the Bible, which is the foundation that later the New Testament came out on the Quran. But what happened also at that point when Moses got all this information wasn't just the Bible and the Ten Commandments. He got concealed information, and which was later, quote-unquote, downloaded by righteous people that came into being. One was Shimon Bar Yochai at the times of Jesus in Jerusalem. And he wrote the Zohar books, which is the foundation of the Kabbalah. And he sat in a cave for 7 years with his son, and they only ate carob fruits. He was so much in the light. He was so connected to God. When he came out of the cave, people fell down of his light. They almost died because he was so strong. So he had to go back to the cave and become more and more human again. So this is the man who downloaded, quote-unquote, the most sacred text of the Kabbalah. And then there was many other people later.
Just in terms of that when you say download and concealed information, what are you referring to there?
What I'm saying is actually it was given by God to Moses on Mount Sinai. But we were not able to perceive it. It's all in the Torah. But then these other righteous people came and took parts of the Torah and made it more explainable to us. That's what I'm saying. It's like it's revealed in certain times. It's hard to maybe comprehend.
It is. I mean, because there are such mysteries here. And the little I understand, I've read a little about the Kabbalah at different points in my life. But the letters of the words contain multiple levels of meaning and position.
Yes.
Everything's
it's amazing.
You know, multiple meanings.
Unbelievable. It's so amazing. I mean, the Psalm of Books, too, is another part of the came of the Torah that King David put down. And you're right, the letters have a lot of power. Like you can read a psalm, and that sentence has so many meanings. And one word has usually two sides. Like the word chiyuvi, which means positive and also means being obliged to do. So it's almost like, what is the beauty of being obliged to create a rhythm of discipline? Day by day, it sounds boring. It sounds difficult. It's like obligation. But it's very positive because the more we commit to something, the more we create space for beauty and abundance to happen. So there's always these little secrets in each little word. Mm-hmm. And there's many, many, many.
How did you connect the Kabbalah to the tulips?
Well, basically, in a very short nutshell, it contains wisdom from the Tree of Life. And it's also... It's bringing all the spheres of the Tree of Life into itself at the bottom of the tree.
And there are ten spheres, right, from the heavenly realms to the earthly realms. Right.
And the Malchut is the bottom one, where we're actually manifesting all that is from above here in a 3D experience. So there's a quote here in the book too. So basically, to me, the tulip healing is part of being in the lower sphere and feeling God consciousness. So here it is. The last sephira, which is one of the spheres, is the most important because God uses it to act through his creation. Malchut is the goal that God had in mind when he created the world. All of the other sephirot, or spheres, are only the means to see Malchut emerge. In relating to the first nine sephirot, spheres, we're outside observers, admiring God's handiwork objectively. We may be impressed, but somehow it never quite becomes an overwhelming experience. It is only when we hear the voice of God echoing from within us, which is Malchut, that we truly transform. And this is Rabbi Shimon Lieberman said this. When we're doing tulip healing, we're actually embodying the tree of life if you're in a position of meditating in a deep place. Because the tree of life exists in all form. So when you bring down the love and energy, which is what the purpose of the tulip is, to hold space to bring in love and light into us, and it depends on us how much light we want to bring into our life. You were talking before about the mind. Your beautiful dream is to bring wisdom to people by hopefully open our minds and crack open. And also so is the truth with the vessel. In the Kabbalah, we talk about the vessel. And it takes a long time to understand it. There's many layers to it, but the main thing is to receive love and light from above in order to be a service to others. If we just receive egocentrically, oh, I want to be shining king, blah, 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 blah.
It's sort of that celebrity thing again. Celebrity. Where it's just the energy goes nowhere.
Right. Goes energy. But if we just say, okay, God, let me eat an apple so I have energy to do the work, and I will thank you for giving me this apple. It's not because I need to eat the apple, because I have energy to give to the world. And it takes time and energy to read into other things and to learn. And it's hard to explain Kabbalah in just a few minutes. It's thousands of years. Even people who have studied it 20, well, I didn't say thousands, it's like maybe 5,000 years, but almost 6,000. But even those people who have studied Kabbalah for 20 years, they still are learning.
They're still
so
arguing
much.
About it.
That's true.
That's a whole tradition into itself, isn't it? Just arguing about it.
Well, the point is actually I understood from my teacher in Israel, who's a great Rabbi Yuval Cohen Asharov. He also has a Chinese medicine school up in the Galilee. He said the reason why people like to argue, mm-hmm. is like, no, I think this is the truth. This is why we need to do this. And this is the law. No, I think God meant this. And then they're like really passionate because you really believe it. And the more they like really get revved up, then at some point your mind starts to open up and it cracks open.
It just stops.
No, it doesn't stop. It opens up. And that's why you sometimes need passion.
Like the mind stops. It's in some way it gets out of the way, and then the real.
Oh, right. The arguing mind camp stops. Yeah, and then
the fixed position of knowing.
Right.
Gives way to this.
Right.
Unknowing.
Exactly, and then you know more.
Then you know more.
But then you know nothing because you know so much more. But then you know, like Einstein said, the more I know, the less I know.
Keeps going.
Yeah, that's. That's why I love Kabbalah. It's amazing.
So, Eva, obviously there's a lot we could talk about around your connection with tulips and the Kabbalah and healing and all of this work. It's a wonderful book, an exciting exploration. I'm just wondering if there's anything you'd like to share in closing.
I can read a poem that I wrote after we did a tulip planting ceremony, apropos manifestation. We did this in the Old City because we do a lot of peace work there.
In
the old city in Jerusalem. And so we went and put tulips in little cracks of old stones to bring loving, tender energy in both the Muslim quarter and the Jewish quarter, the Greek quarter and the Christian. It was very fun. So after what I wrote this, and it kind of is connected to the Kabbalah because we all want peace and unity and beauty and joy for all people. Okay. Oh, it's called Expansion, a Love Letter to the Tulip Kingdom. My dearest tulip, your internal seed is the ultimate contraction of potential expansive love. Your successive growth into blossoming becomes the organic way you enlarge your vessel and inhale in beauty. As you grow, more love enters into your midst and consequently into our world. As you inch upwards, you drink in the light from above in order to reflect back to us our work and our environment, what it is to embody God's love for us, our own divine expression of potential blossoming. Wow, that is what you are. It is a deliberate motion outwards, a never-ending expansive act of potentiality in its glorious unfolding. As you grow, our world grows like waves of eruptions into glamorous, expressive statements. You never move backwards into contractions like we humans do when we grow older or encounter this world's harsh reality. The only thing you do in the completion act of your reckless blossoming is to joyously let go. Yes, a speechless surrendering into beautiful death. Slowly folding your sagging leaves, gently gathering yourself into a timeless sigh, with such sweet softness that even God gasps at his own creation, fearlessly shriveling up into nothingness.
Thank you, Ava.
Thank you.
Well, it's a beautiful book. It's called Tulip Love, A Healing Model for Individuals and Communities. And the website is tuliplove.com.
Yeah. And people are welcome to visit it there. Some images there and quotes and also but upcoming events and times to train and have courses too. Thank you very much, Jeff. Okay.
Thank you.
God bless.
You've been listening to a conversation with Ava Ariella Lindberg, author of the book Tulip Love, A Healing Model for Individuals and Communities, published by Angel Lion Publications out of San Geronimo, California. And it's available at tuliplove.com. And you can also find out more information about the work of Ava and the Tulip Temple at that website. And that, again, is www.tuliplove.com. I'll provide a link to their site in the show notes at wisdomtolife.com. My name is Jeff Westman. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. If you have questions or comments, you can post them at wisdomtolife.com or send an email to jeff@wisdomtolife.com. Thanks for listening, and may you bring your wisdom to life.